The third case, the United States versus Pappas, will be submitted on the briefs and the record, and that case is taken under advisement. We'll proceed to the fourth case, the United States versus Baker. Ms. Christensen.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Counsel. My name is Joanna Christensen. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois.
You have a playbook as well as the
government. I have a playbook? Well, Your Honor, I will.
At least it looks similar in number of cases, which is fine. But
it is. I will disclose to the court that I have six arguments this week. This is number five.
You must have it down pretty pat.
I do. I'm not sure I need my notes at all at this point. And in this case, however, I feel, and none of Your Honors were sitting on any of the other panels, but this is a case where, and I'll jump right into the plain error standard, where I believe that there is a good indication the judge would have gone lower in Ms. Baker's case. He sentenced her at the time to the low end of the guideline range, and although did not state that he felt constrained by those guidelines, I believe that any judge sentencing in the time period before Blakely came down was in fact constrained by the guidelines.
So you have us work on a presumption that all district judges, if they didn't have an animosity toward the guidelines, felt the pressure as such that we should presume, I guess, that they would consider lower sentences.
You know, I can't speak to every case. I certainly can speak to all of my own cases. And as soon as Booker came down, I believe we were all somewhat surprised by the way it turned out. And looking now towards advisory guidelines, I went through all of my sentencing transcripts and read what district court judges were saying.
Those who were on the panel had Booker in this decision, and this court weren't surprised.
You weren't surprised?
No. I joined Judge Posner in the Booker decision.
That's true. And every district court judge, of course, sentences differently, and this panel is more than aware of that. But across the board, we find that judges were no longer discussing whether they liked the guidelines or didn't like the guidelines, because they had been, in some cases, admonished not to discuss those things, and perhaps had resigned themselves to the fact that this was never going to happen in the federal system. I don't think that we can discount that effect on judges, particularly judges who may not have sentenced before the guidelines came into effect.
You mean older judges like Judge Evans?
Well, I can't comment on that, but I know there are probably a few. And in this case, in Ms. Baker's case particularly, the factors of the guidelines had previously made impossible for the court to consider, such as her age and lack of guidance as a youth and her education and mental status, certainly would have come in this case. As a matter of fact, they did come in. And the judge said, you know, she has had a very hard lifestyle, a very hard upbringing, but felt constrained by the structure of the guidelines, that it did not fit into the downward departure as contemplated by the guidelines. Although it is not directly saying, if I had the choice, I would sentence lower, I think that's as close as we're going to get in most cases. And I'll briefly address the court's questions that were related to Crosby and the limited remand situation. Having argued nearly every day this week in front of nearly every judge on this court,
how do you think the court's going to come out?
You know, if you'd asked me on Monday, I would have given you a different answer. And I don't know if I should take bets. A little side business going on. But
see, what you have here
what
today.
What would your answer on Monday have been?
I'm sorry?
What would your answer have been after hearing?
My answer on Monday would have been that Crosby was not favored by that panel. It was not in-depth discussed, but that seemed to be a remand, making the plain error decision, this court making the plain error decision and deciding whether to send cases back to the district court for resentencing. Important to the Monday panel, and I apologize if I am prejudicing my opponent by discussing it if he was not there or did not hear it, Crosby has not been used by any other circuit up to this point. and has been criticized widely by both the government and defense bars by not listening to the Supreme Court's directive in Booker that said reviewing courts must review for plain error, not district courts, although they didn't say not district courts, but implying that the Court of Appeals should make the plain error decision of whether to send it back. In addition, the Supreme Court did remand Booker's case. As a matter of fact, they vacated his sentence and remanded for resentencing. I think that's a clear indication, both on the plain error standard and meeting that plain error standard, and what the Supreme Court has signaled to the courts of appeals to do with the cases that are currently pending.
So I just want to make sure I understand your position. So therefore, you suggest the Second Circuit approach doesn't comply with... let me put it this way. The Second Circuit approach isn't permissible under the Supreme Court decision.
I don't know if I would say it's not permissible. I would say
If it were permissible.
If it were permissible, I have a hard time seeing how it is. I don't know how the procedure would work. It's something that I'm not familiar with, and I don't know if this court is familiar with. I think it would lead to, frankly, a lack of judicial resources if these cases were yo-yoing back and forth between the Court of Appeals and the District Court. I believe that a full remand to the District Court for resentencing would be one step. That step may be taken care of at that level. The court would decide, well, you know, I was right the first time. I imposed the sentence I think is appropriate, even after considering all these factors. Or the court may go lower. And it could very well end at that point. I think that many defendants, and I certainly am not intending to waive any appeals, but if got a lower sentence, maybe pleased with that and not appeal, and that would be the end of the case. I don't envision a system working well where this court retains some sort of jurisdiction and asks for something in writing on the record with the district court to be sent back up to this court. Of course, I'm not a member of this court. I've never been a judge, so I don't really envision how that would work. Maybe this court has a better idea.
Some members on our court have never been trial judges either.
That is true.
Not this panel.
Not this panel. And to that, I know that on Wednesday, Judge Easterbrook was a very strong proponent, it seemed, of a limited Crosby solution, and I'm sure has voiced his opinions to this panel about that. And I was not here on Wednesday, and I don't understand how he would limit
necessarily. How come you didn't show up Wednesday?
Well, Your Honor, I needed a break.
Are you suggesting that the appropriate method would be to, if we so find there's plain error, to vacate the sentence and return it for a fresh start or not?
I believe that is the appropriate situation, and that as I was sitting in the courtroom, reread that portion of Booker, and that's exactly what the Supreme Court did with Booker's case. There's a sentence in there. It's on the Lexis page 87, which may have changed at this point, where it said that Booker's case is vacated and remanded for resentencing. That's as close as we're going to get as a directive for the Supreme Court. There's certainly nothing more direct than that statement. And I want to emphasize, of course, as I have, that the district court judge did not consider 3553A in this case, which, as has been mentioned, is in conflict with some portions of the guidelines. And also that 3553A encourages the court to sentence sufficient but not greater than necessary. And in Ms. Baker's case particularly, I believe that the sentence she received is greater than necessary, and also believe the district court would agree, given the chance.
Go ahead.
Unless the court has further questions, I'll save my remaining time for rebuttal.
Surely. Thank you, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you.
Mr. Hainsey?
May it please the court, good morning. I'm Steve Hines, one of the assistant U.S. attorneys from Chicago. I'd like to just briefly address this particular case, and counsel said that she thinks in this case there's a good indication that the judge would have gone lower. The fact is he did sentence the defendant at the low end of the guideline range, but he did not say anything else on the record that indicated that he did in fact feel constrained by the guidelines or would have given another sentence.
Yes, well, it depends which judge you're in front of in the Northern District.
That's true, and I did hear your questions to the first in the first argument relating to that, and that's true. Some some judges would make a record of that given how they felt about the guidelines, and others would not. And so to that extent, we don't have any evidence that indicates really what the judge would have done. Again, under the plain error standard, it's the government's, the Department of Justice's position that it's the defendant's burden, and if there's not that evidence, then the defendant fails to meet that standard.
Well, would you, accepting that as the government's position, as we must, I'm sure you're accurately representing it, should we send it back to see if the judge, having had the opportunity to make that such a comment, would make such a comment?
I don't know that you want to send all these back asking judges what comments they'd make.
Well, but on the other hand, you're asking this court to consider, are you not, Mr. Hines, when a judge makes such a comment?
Well, what I'm saying, Judge, is in those particular cases where the judge makes a comment one way or the other, I feel constrained and I'd go lower or I'd go higher, then you have clear evidence already and you know that there was plain error. I'm saying in the other cases, we don't have that evidence here.
A judge operating under a system where he or she might know that making such a comment might impact this the sentence under the new regime, it doesn't seem kind of a strange approach to take.
It does seem a little strange. I'm just saying that we have a limited number of cases where comments such as that have been made, and we have some clear evidence as to what the judge.
Well, I can understand the government taking a position to discount that kind of comments entirely, but to suggest that that might be an element of how a defendant could establish in his or her case that might be an indicator is a troublesome thing to me personally. But if that's the government's position, that's the government's position.
Actually, Judge, what I'd prefer to do in my remaining time, rather than restate the government's position over and over again, which you've seen, certainly, and I don't want to subject the court to a Groundhog Day or Groundhog Week experience here.
We have that.
Whether I do anything or not about it. I would like to just address briefly some of the alternatives, I guess, that have been considered this week. And this is my first and only appellate argument dealing with these issues, but I don't feel prejudiced by counsel's being here most of the week.
No, I would say Ms. Christensen, as is her tradition, made a very fair presentation of what went before.
Right.
And besides, we're online and you can go and listen to us.
That's true. And in fact, I did listen to one of the arguments yesterday. And I, from talking to others in the office, I have some familiarity with certain things that have happened this week. I know there's this ongoing dialogue that will continue after today even. I understood that Judge Wood said that the court's looking for some middle ground here. And I'm familiar with Judge Easterbrook's proposal that there be a limited remand where this court maintains jurisdiction of the case and certifies a question to the district court. At this point, I can tell you that, at least in my office, that seems to be a much preferable approach to that the Second Circuit took in the Crosby case, or some other approach where there's just an altogether wholesale remand of all the cases to the district court. First of all, the Supreme Court didn't say all cases should be remanded to the district court for resentencing. And the court could have said that, but the court said that the reviewing courts should apply the ordinary doctrines of harmless and plain error. And they further said that not every sentence gives rise to a Sixth Amendment violation or to a new sentencing hearing. So I don't think that's what the Supreme Court envisioned, is everything being remanded automatically. As I said, the government feels that what Judge Easterbrook was suggesting is preferable to what the Crosby case did in the Second Circuit. I guess one of the main problems that we see with that is that Crosby in the Second Circuit was essentially delegating to the district court the responsibility for determining whether or not there was plain error in the case. And that is traditionally an appellate function. Again, that doesn't comport real either with what the Supreme Court said.
The Fourth Circuit did that analysis, found plain error, and vacated and remanded for resentencing. I mean, isn't that a fairly clean and traditional method of handling these cases? I mean, if it had been any time, pre-guideline, vacate the sentence if it's unconstitutional and remand for resentencing.
But this court, the appellate court, should be making that determination,
right,
rather
yes.
than the district court determining
yes, no,
whether
I'm saying
or not
that if we would find yeah. plain error, and then we vacate the sentence and remand for resentencing.
Yes, and there may be some cases where for whatever reasons, there are a wide variety of facts in these cases, but in some cases you may have sufficient evidence that you feel there's clearly plain error.
Well, we had an earlier case here that there was a mandatory life sentence. I mean, there's no discretion
And in that case, there's no reason to remand it. So that's what I'm saying. In some cases, there'd clearly be a reason to do it. Other cases, there's clearly no reason that you should remand it. In other cases, there may be some uncertainty. And if this court needs additional information, it has the alternative that Judge Easterbrook suggested available to it to help it become better informed as to whether or not there was plain error.
But don't we have to, in every case, divine what the district judge was thinking?
In some cases you know that from the evidence you have. In these other cases, though, if you're following the suggestion of Judge Easterbrook, you'll get an indication from the court as to whether or not it would have substantially given a different sentence. In particular, what we would suggest as far as what question should be certified to the district court, it would be something along the lines of, is there a reasonable probability that the outcome of the initial prior sentencing that took place for this defendant would have been different, would have resulted
in... Let me ask you this. You referred to it several times, and I have gone online to listen to the prior arguments, but you're certifying a question as a method of doing this? In other words, only certify a question to the district judge, would you impose the same sentence under... the Booker regime rather than guidelines?
Yeah, that's what we're suggesting, that you certify a
question. So we just retain the case.
Yes, the court would retain jurisdiction in this set of cases that you feel you need additional information. And as Judge Posner discussed yesterday, this is certainly something that the court has done from time to time. There's ample precedent, that you have authority to do that.
Why couldn't we do that in every case? Every case that fits the Booker review.
I'm saying you don't need to do it in every case. We've talked about cases where it's clear that the judge would have given a different sentence,
but
or where there's a mandatory minimum.
How
that
onerous would that be if we did it in every case just to make sure that we're right?
Well, again, the Supreme Court in Booker is telling the reviewing courts that you need to make a case-by-case decision.
Assuming we found plain error, I guess.
It may be that, as a practical matter, there's a relatively small number of cases that the court would decide it didn't need any input from the district court. But I still think that under Booker, the court should look at these cases individually and determine if it does need, I guess, this additional feedback. But as I said, there certainly is ample authority for this court to do that. By maintaining jurisdiction, it would be the one that ultimately would be making the decision as to whether there was plain error or not, which is the appropriate role for this court. In asking for input from the district court, we would suggest that you ask something along the lines of, is there a reasonable probability that the outcome would have been different in a non-trivial or material way, to use some language that Crosby used, if the district court had viewed the guidelines as advisory rather than as mandatory at the time that it imposed the sentence before. As we started to talk about, in some cases there would not be any need for a remand, even in that limited form. So it would be crafting a little bit more narrowly a solution to the situation, I guess. If you have any other questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Otherwise, we'll stand on the arguments set forth in the brief and ask that the court affirm the sentence.
Thank you, Mr. Hines.
Thank you.
Ms. Christians.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll be brief. And just note that in the movie Groundhog Day, Bill Murray finally did get it right, so I hope that I do finally get it right. I think that I need to go back to, and I'm thinking about reading these sentencing hearing transcripts and knowing judges from every district in the Seventh Circuit through my practice and how different every judge is. Some judges simply impose a sentence with no findings. Other judges spend much more time. I don't think either
it's
one is right.
Hand-wringing.
Some judges do that. Some judges may be a little more time for a lecture than hand-wringing. But I just, we can't differentiate judge by judge in making this
determination. What do you think about the certified question?
I think that it, from a judicial point of view, would be the best way to know what the district court would have done, and perhaps the only way. And even though other courts have not followed Crosby, both the Fourth Circuit and the Tenth Circuit have noted that to guess as to what the district court would have done is essentially making the sentencing determination themselves and have rejected that. Those courts have also found plain error and remanded for resentencing. And I also think that the line between Crosby and these other cases is not that bright in that instance. I think the end effect may be the same, certifying questions versus remanding totally. So unless the court has further questions, I thank you very much.
All right. And thank you for your work this week.
Thank you.
Thanks to all counsel. Thank you, Mr. Hines. Case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the fifth case.